Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I apologize for interrupting the conversations, but we want to begin, and I want to say thank you to all of you for coming. We're delighted you're here. We have many more people who are going to be joining us, but, you know, Washington, there's an old saying, you know, when you call the in the old days, some of the older people around here remember that you used to call the operator to find out what the time was, you know? And the old joke in Washington is when you call the operator, you can say, well, it's 8:15, 8:30 at the latest, you know? And that's so we're still going to have people that will be joining us, and we've got a very, very good registration for the conference. Thank you. Thank you all for coming. My name is John Hamry. I'm the president here at CSIS. I am delighted to have this opportunity to welcome back to Washington my very good friend Hatake Amasan. We've had a chance to work together for many years. We first met when Noburo was the head of JETRO, and at that time established a very good, close working relationship and have been able to sustain that since then. And I'm very pleased to have this opportunity. And I'll say in just a minute why I think it's so important. But if I could, I would like to begin by just stepping back for a second to say the reason I was so glad that we could have this conference, and it's become an annual event that we do with the Japan Economic Forum Foundation, is that we're going through a rather tumultuous period right now in relations between our two countries. And it all seems to be summarized by the one word, Futenma. You know, Futenma is on everybody's lips. And every time I meet with friends from Japan, I'm always asked, "Well, what about Futenma?" And I always tell, Japanese don't need to know this, but this is for my American friends that it's hard for us to appreciate the enormous significance of this last election. And I'm not speaking about, I'm not making a partisan comment. It isn't about partisan politics. It's that it represented really an incredible shift in an epoch of politics in Japan. We have had only four or five of these in the United States' history. You know, probably the one of comparable significance for us was back when Franklin Delano Roosevelt was elected. That just completely changed the political landscape. And for Japan has, since the end of World War II, was led by a party that developed a remarkably successful strategy. A strategy that took a country that was in ashes, literally in ashes, and made it the second largest economy in the world, and gave Japanese citizens this remarkable standard of living, and to do so in a way that was still fully consistent with the cultural heritage of Japan. It's a remarkable thing what was accomplished during this period. But in this success, It led to a period of time when in these last years there have been economic strain in Japan. It's been going on for a number of years. And it's led to some very deep questioning about Japan in the world. And for many years, Japan saw itself as being America's best partner in the world. But it led to some developments that became controversial. And when the United States asked Japan to help in Iraq and Afghanistan, that became controversial. And a lot of Japanese felt that they were pulled into something that wasn't their business and did it only because of this relationship with the United States. And an attitude started to develop that maybe Japan is doing things that aren't in its best interest just because of this subordinate relationship with a big brother. And maybe we need to think that through in a different way. I think that was very much a part of this last election. And I think it's still going on. I think that Japan is still deeply thinking through the way forward now. And what is that way forward? Is it based on this intimate partnership with the United States? Is it Japan taking a larger leadership role in Asia? Is it that Japan will see its main partner in the world, the United Nations? I mean, I think there's just lots of very deep, very important questioning going on in Japan. And frankly, we're going to do some of that now after this last year here. I think that the vision that President Obama set the first year is now causing a great re-questioning. So this is very natural. The reason I go through it is to say, and this is to my American friends, we should be careful not to force a decision on something so pivotal as Futenma, because it's really symbolic of something much bigger. And Japan needs time to think their way through this. If we were to force it in our frustration, because we had 13 long years of negotiating it, you know, and these were tough negotiations. This was not an easy compromise between the two of us. But if we were to just say, but the GIST government had nothing to do with it. I mean, they were not involved with those negotiations. So if we were to say right now, you have got to decide right now what the answer is, in the middle of the great questioning that's going on, we're likely to get the wrong answer. And Japan may be likely to get the wrong answer. So it's a lot better for us to take the time to work with each other, be patient with each other. And frankly, the United States needs to do some reassessment as well. We still can't figure out what our trade policy is in this country. And yet the great questioning that's going on in Japan and in this country is, how are we going to get out of this recession? So we've got a lot we need to do together. And that's why I'm so glad we have this conference today, because I think Japan and the United States share a very large central problem, economic problem. And that is, how do we sustain the quality of life and the standard of living for our workers when they have to compete against 800 million Chinese workers who are working a lot harder for a lot less money and willing to live in a lot poorer circumstances? And we have got to find ways that reconciles our economic system in a global economic environment that's very challenging. Now, if we were to try to do that through our own separate national means, we could end up having a quite inferior option for both of us. If we can find a way to do it together, we're more likely going to find success. So it's, Hatakeyama-san, thank you for the vision that you had in wanting to have this conference and to make it the central theme. We need many, many more ways for Japan and the United States to be working together now, as both of us are thinking our way forward in a complex new world. And so I congratulate you for your vision, and I think now we should be really having substance today. I'm only here for ornamental reasons, which is to welcome you, but I did want to say thank you all for coming, and I would like to ask my very good friend Hatakeyama-san to come and open the conference for real. Thank you very much.
Good morning. My name is Hatakeyama, Noboru Hatakeyama. And thank you very much for those kind and encouraging words coming from Dr. Hamre. Dr. Hamre, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, it is my great honor to be here with you this morning at this important conference. First of all, I'd like to express my heartfelt gratitude to Dr. Hamre for co-organizing this conference, and to all the speakers, discussants, and the participants for attending. Thank you. Attending the conference in spite of your busy schedule. Today, we'll be discussing possible future courses that the U.S. and Japanese economies may take. Both economies have faced difficulties and challenges, and there are many issues to consider. For example, will our economy encounter a double dip this year? This is a very serious question. And could green-related technologies and new health-related inventions actually substitute the automotive and the related industries? What sort of new business models would help corporations to revitalize their activities? Should we be ready for a new capitalism, with governments and the private sector changing roles to some extent? On the national security front, as was referred to by Dr. Hamre, our discussion may lead to if commitments made by a former government can survive a power shift. As you know well, the new Hatoyama cabinet has decided to review by May of this year a commitment made by former cabinets. The Obama administration also changed a policy implemented by the Bush administration regarding a missile defense system which had been deployed in the Czech Republic and Poland. Our topics won't end up at those points. We have to scrutinize realities and cultivate possible collaborative policy areas between our two countries. For example, we have to address the real reasons for the financial crisis that was deepened by Lehman Brothers' collapse in September 2008. Since then, many international conferences have taken place, including the G20 in London and Pittsburgh, with the aim of coming up with measures to prevent a recurrence of such a financial crisis. However, they have never referred to the possible prohibition of securitization of subprime loans, which was one of the most important causes of this deep recession. Securitization in general would be all right, but when it comes to securitization of a bad loan, subprime loans, the story becomes quite different. Is there any room for the governments of the United States and Japan to cooperate with each other in prohibiting this? Another example would be for us to take joint initiatives to continue stimulating our economies, analyzing whether the economic recovery in both countries to date is sustainable, and if not, coming up with proposals to continue the current recovery. In this respect, President Obama's proposal to impose a new tax on financial institutions, including banks, is quite interesting. Reportedly, the government of Japan has been asked if it would do the same. If Japan accepts this proposal, it will be the first economic collaboration between Japan and the U.S. under the current new governments. The DPJ, Democratic Party of Japan, stated in the manifest it published in the election for the House of Representatives last August or so, that it would accelerate negotiations on the Japan-U.S. FTA. Although it would be ideal to conclude a full-fledged U.S.-Japan FTA, my proposal is to strike a U.S.-Japan FTA for trade in services alone, since I'm afraid that the U.S. Congress and the Japanese Diet are not supportive of a full-fledged FTA, which includes both trade in goods and services. Although the original nature of an FTA remains economic, an FTA can lead to strengthened political relations between countries involved in it. As with any other FTAs, a U.S.-Japan FTA, even if it were for trade in services alone, would contribute greatly to deepening and enhancing our mutual relationship even more. I expect that the speakers and commentators today will touch upon some of these issues, and by the end of this discussion, it will have contributed to increase your knowledges and wisdoms and finding some realistic solutions over such issues. With these comments, I'd like to thank the people affiliated with the Center for Strategic and International Studies, CSIS, and the other participants once again for joining us here today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hatakayama, for laying out the important issues that we're going to be dealing with today. My name is Amy Seawright. I'm adjunct fellow at the Japan Chair at CSIS, and I will serve as the moderator for the conference today. And without further ado, let me call up the first panel.
Panel on the outlook for the Japanese economy. My name is Derek Scissors. I'm the Asia economist at the Heritage Foundation, which is here in Washington, D.C., a couple stops down the red line. There are some other differences between Heritage and CSIS, but we'll talk about those later. We are in a situation where the panelists have all requested more time because they have so much to say. So I'm not going to give very lengthy introductions at all, and I apologize for anyone if that's abrupt, but the bios are in your packets, and we'd all like to hear what they have to say and as much as possible talk to them about it rather than hearing me say what they were doing in 1987. Very briefly, our first speaker is Akira Kojima, who is currently Senior Fellow at the Japan Center for Economic Research. He will be followed by Yoshikazu Goto, who is the Director General for Manufacturing Industries Policy at METI, and then Richard Katz, who is the Editor-in-Chief for the Oriental Economist Report. The plan here is to have Professor Kojima and Dr. Goto give their presentations. Mr. Katz will give comments. If we have any time, they may wish to reply, and then questions. What we do not want to do is hear me talk, so I'm right now going to turn it over to Professor Kojima.
Thank you very much. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's my great honor to be in Washington and then speak, to have the chance to speak just in front of just kind of important people. Well, two government have now two new leaders. And out for Japan, we have in the past 10, 15 years, we changed prime minister too much. After having subprime level of prime ministers, we are now having new government. And a new government led by Hatoyama has no shortage of difficult issues besides Futenma. This is the first session, so in the morning. So I'll give you some mental exercise to begin with. Well, this has Hatoyama's government have so many difficult issues. One day, Hatoyama asks some advice from the God. And God gave Hatoyama a chance to give him, the God, three questions. And Hatoyama made the first question. God, tell me when we can have the recovery of Japan's economy. God smiled and said that, the recovery is already on your hand, although it's a slow recovery, but the recovery started. And second question, God, tell me we can get out of deflation. And God said, it will not happen during your administration. This discouraged Hatoyama, but he encouraged himself to make the last question. God, tell me, we are suffering from the problem of demography, depopulation, aging, and low fertility ratio. When we can have the fertility ratio of 2, then this question made God very dead silent for a while. And God finally said, it will not happen during my administration. Well, as for Japan's economic issues, we are now picking up from the bottom. After the demand landscape of Japan's economy and all other countries' economy have changed fundamentally. But many economies are now coming out of the bottom. And before I go to the analysis of the recent trend and the near future trend, let me try to pick up some catch-alls. This year will be a difficult year for Japan as well as for many countries. My catchphrase all have the initial D, I found. One is deflation. And the second is the possibility of double dip type of recovery. The next one is dilution. It's something to do with the stock market. In the past few months, many big institutions, including big commercial banks, have been issuing massively new stocks, IPOs. And the next one is deleveraging, which is similar in your country. This is still continue, and in the process of deleveraging, we may see a very slow expansion of credit. Sometimes there's some contraction of credit. And next D is debt to GDP ratio, deficit of governments. Again, this is shared by many countries, including U.S. Next D is DPJ, Democratic Party of Japan. Why? Because this political system creates uncertainties. Their policies are yet to be tested. So DPJ policy is in question. And another D is depopulation, decline of population because of the low birth ratio. And this is a demographic issue, very, very long-lasting. It's very structural issue. And the next D is defense, including FEMA. And next D is dollar, exchange rates. And last D may be increasing disparities in various sectors. Disparity of the level of incomes amongst workers, and disparity of economic recovery pace between regions, and so forth. But I try to pick up some positive areas. Again, catchphrase. All the catchphrases have initial E. Opportunity in emerging economies. Energy. This is a tough issue, but it gives us a very important chance. Next is ecology or eco sector. This is giving the impetus for technological development. And next is e-commerce. Next is related to emerging economies, the export. And last is elderly people. Sometimes we talk in terms of the negative concepts, but the increase of elderly people means we are now having a new, increasingly expanding market needed by the senior generation. Well, first, let me try to talk about our general economic outlook. Although Japan was not the epicenter of the current global financial and real economic crisis, the collapse in export demand and the financial spillovers have pushed Japan's economy into a severe recession with real-term GDP contraction by 3.7% and 2.9% for fiscal 2008 and fiscal 2009. This was followed by after 2.3% positive expansion for 2007, and the longest expansion in Japan's post-war history from 2002 and 2007. As pre-crisis expansion was driven dominantly by double-digit level of export growth, and external demand sharply shrunk at a very high point of export dependency of Japan's economy, the decline of export economic activity after Lehman shock was larger than the epicenter USA. Export shrunk in the first 3 months of last year by 45 to 50% from a year ago. It created half economy. It's an incredible number. With the help of fiscal and monetary emergency measures, including BOJ's reintroduction of near zero interest rate policies and quantitative easing policies, combined with export recovery following the improvement of global economy, Japan's recovery, Japan began to recover and positive growth from the second quarter of 2009. And real GDP growth is expected to be around positive 1%, around 1%, although it's a small number, it's a positive number for this fiscal 2010, and possibly 2%, around 2% next year. However, we must look at the problem of deflation. Nominal of GDP, money-based GDP, will be still in the negative territory in the year 2010. And Japan must wait till around our second quarter of 2011 to move into positive territory as for the nominal of GDP. Deflation may stay for some time. Another difficult factor is that the economy continues to be underwater. It means the economic activity level. Recovery year 2010's real-term GDP level is still some 6% lower than recent peak year of 2007. This is a symbolic number for us to have the deflation. And this is leaving nearly 7% GDP gap, output gap, largest ever in Japan. My institute, JCER, forecasts that GDP gap can be removed only towards end of the 2010s. So it takes many years. As for nominal GDP, which is now at the level of back to the year 1991, and some 10% lower than 2007 peak. This year forecast, this nominal GDP cannot be recover this peak level during the 2010s. Such a deflation continues, and it's put severe pressure on the tax revenue, making fiscal reconstruction fairly a hard job. And before we talk a little bit about the future, we must look back the recent past. Why Japan's economy shrunk more sharply than U.S. and many other countries? I can pick up several reasons. One, at the point of global crisis, Japan's economy had already entered into recession, downturn. Second, the U.S. financial crisis turned into real economic crisis after Lehman shock of September last year, 2008, and curtailed Japan's export dramatically. Three, high export dependency at the point of global trade contraction. Four, Japan's export was too much dependent on the U.S. market. And Japan's export specialization in advanced and big-ticket manufacturing items like autos and so forth. And five, heavier weight in the economy of automobile industry. Maybe out of the total weight of auto industry, including subcontractors' pyramid, in the Japanese economy, maybe in percentage-wise, the share is somewhere around four times higher than that of the U.S. Next one, six is yen appreciation by the process of unwinding of what we call the carry trade. So this is very long. But because of this, our economic downturn was the sharpest. And sometimes we often hear that, sometimes we hear that discussion that as we depended on too much on export, we must shift our resources from the external demand to domestic demand. But I don't agree with that. We must cultivate both external and domestic demand. We need to have two engines. We have the better balance between the two type of the markets. And here we can focus about the importance of emerging economies. And the next point is about the future strategy. Namely, we need new development model. We used to have the good performance up until early 1980s. That was the process period of what we call long-lasted catching-up process. It was supported by good policies. But the catching-up process almost completed sometime early 1980s. Completed in the sense that our auto production, steel production level became comparable to U.S. So in terms of the technological capability, in terms of the production capacity level, we completed the catching process. But that was a good success for Japan's economy. But after that, problem happened. We couldn't get out of this old successful model of development. We needed to introduce post-catch-up growth models. But we kept the old model. That aggravated the bubble economy during late 1980s. And after the bubble burst, we are still having stagnation just because of we cannot yet get new development model. And for what are the necessary elements for the new development model? When we have the catching up rate, our investment rate is very high, which is more higher than the domestic savings. So we have been suffering from a saving shortage economy for many, many decades up until the completion time of the catching up process. For those periods, the bank-centric financial system was deadly needed. We collected the small deposit and put that together and infused the huge money to the industrial investment. That was good. But after the catch-up rate, the picture changed from savings shortage to savings surplus economy. So we should introduce the big bang of financial big bang to create more capable capital markets to create, produce risk-taking money to support risk takers. And another challenge is globalization. As Hatakeyama-san mentioned about FTA, we are rather behind even in other countries in Asia. FTA covered areas of Japan, FTA covered areas trade of Japan is behind other countries. This ratio to total trade volume is for U.S. 41%, France 72%, Germany similar, China 24%, but as for Japan, it's only 16.4%. So our trade is not enough covered by FTA area trade. Anyway, we have the challenge. And this year, next year, we have positive growth. I don't see the double dip type of recession this year. If we define double dip recession as the sharp negative growth, this type of recession, the slow growth may, some slowing process or pause may happen sometime before summer this year, but it will not be the double dip recession. And next year, we are anemic, but still keep our positive recovery. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Cizes, and thanks to CSIS and JF for giving me a good chance to talk this morning. And first, my apologies. Today's my comment is not fully reflecting Métis' official view and my own one. Sometimes I'm rather opinionated man, and as research people, as well as Métis official. So since Mr. Kojima covered the wider area of macroeconomy, I'd like to focus more on the specific area in considering what is the challenge to the economy, our economy, to Japan, sometimes the U.S. and worldwide. And I'd like to say as a conclusion that industries have more, still have a certain role to solve or deal with this sort of problem. I'm discussing on the 3 points, the what's going on economics and challenges to economic and society now, and the third, what kind of role industry can do to contribute to solve the problem. The first, what's going on macroeconomy and industry and other areas. This is a long-range view of the GDP per capita compared country to country. So this is between 1870 to now. And the UK and the US have been always good. And Germany and Japan lost at the World War II. But they recovered. Germany recovered. But the Japanese case, we recovered and came more to caught up the leading countries. And South Korea, Thailand, India, China, their speed is like our speed, which has been made several decades ago. Anyway, what we are now is this kind of quite modest growth of economy era. It started more than 30 years ago, some 40 years ago. So it still exists a kind of illusion that this sort of rapid growth might happen again in our mind. So it doesn't happen looking at this graph. And also, these people, now it's all right, but no one exceeded this line. And this is the financial crisis in Asia. And I'd like to skip this, but just briefly. This 1868 is the end of Tokugawa era. That time, our export heavily depended on this sort of specific goods are coming from primary industry. But now, quite diversified to the third, secondary or third tertiary industries. Aging problem. Usually, over 65 years old people is considered as aging people. And looking for 100 years, Japan just recently exceeded Italy and now leading as a ratio of aged peoples. And the U.S. is here. So Japan's problem to challenge now challenged is low growth of economy and the aging problem is happening together. So we don't have a good role model anymore. We need to establish our own model. And the coming several decades, we will lead in this index, good or bad. Anyway, we are at the top. Environment issue. In the past, the environmental pollution issue was popular. Soils or air or water was polluted by sometimes toxic chemical stuffs. But this was limited to 1,000 people in the specific area, but risk was high but quite limited. But now, the global environmental problems are typically, the global climate change, the risk level is not high, but it much population is exposed to this issue. Sometimes, globally, everyone is facing that problem. So this shift is occurring. And this red line is the equivalent line. So risk level is becoming, total amount of risk is becoming higher. So coming together quite conceptually, in the past, in the 70s, this is environment side. Specific areas, high risk. Coming into the low risk, but spreading out. And this is a kind of dealing with the people with handicapped. In the past, the people who were wounded in the war, or sometimes people had some disease or some impairments when the person was born, a kind of issue is now becoming to be dealing with people over 80 years old. In the past, they just lived in houses, but now they're coming into town and have some inconvenience in looking and hearing kind of things. They don't have specific impairments, but they still have inconvenience. Or left-handed people, not politically left-handed, and people who are good and left hand is better than right hand physically. Or the more globalized and foreign people come and go, and kind of communication gap happens. This sort of widespread problem is now occurring, can be compared in the same way, environment and aged or handicapped. Second, challenges for econ and society. So I'd like to mention about market mechanisms are really working or not. Stakeholders is widening and contribution expected for the industry sector. First, the capitalism or market are supposed to solve the problem automatically or built-in kind of function. For example, developed countries and developing countries, after all, will win together. Was the idealistic model. But what's happening now is, for example, in African nations, disease or poverty, and they might not catch up after all. Kind of things is happening. So, well, what does this mean? Maybe the market cannot, or capitalism cannot solve this problem. So maybe what happens next is kind of government should do something, or kind of control or some rule have to be taken. So it usually costs very high. So what I would like to emphasize on is still industry or market have some possibility to solve some part of the problem. In this context, the enterprise activities scale to evaluate their values. Conventionally, the tangible values, financial assets or money earned or rate of return kind of things. But now, intangible values are becoming more important, including consistency or integrity, corporate brand value or social commitment or human rights kind of things. This is made by the French standardization organization. They put emphasis on environment and society as well as economy. These three are said to be triple bottom lines, and this is stakeholders. This is shareholder, government, finance company, insurance company, workers, clients, even here is competitors. So there are 13 have been listed as stakeholders. So 13 multiplied 3 makes 39. It means so many conditions or requirements. So no one can fulfill all the requirements. Now each company or the enterprise need to define themselves or have more concrete philosophy to which way I'm going. So I take this one and I don't do take this one. Kind of a philosophy is more requested. In other words, in the past century, companies' activity or economic activities goal is kind of rate of return, money earned kind of things. But now, if we divide economy's function into two larger parts, in the past, efficiency was emphasized. But now, public welfare or delivering or deploying or sharing welfare is more emergingly important. So sustainability or productivity are the same natural resources or social resources consumed. In other words, sustainability is made of competitiveness or economic viability. This one is, of course, still quite important, but socio-harmonized or the positive external economy is quite important. And last, industry's roles. First, of course, innovation is quite important. I don't have time today, I just like to show you the pictures. CO2 have to be declined. Electric vehicle kind of things is quite needed. And electric vehicles patent number is Japan is leading like this. Or components by chemical stuffs. Japan's makers have much chance to contribute. And the carbon composites, this is 787 Boeing. The fuselages or the wings are all made in carbon reinforced FRP or kind of things. Japan's companies is having this sort of share. And the cellular phones, the camera lens, mostly provided by a certain Japanese chemical company. Lithium-ion battery material also this company. And the special optical fiber is developed and provided by a KO's team. They are working together. Carbon nanotube. Oh, this was nanofiber. And this is a kind of artificial skins. It's on the Time magazine's front page. this is the carbon 3, 4, 5s are made by the bioprocesses. And Toyota's way, Toyota is now having problem, but Toyota's way of production is quite widespread. But this is next to Toyota's way of management of chemical plant. This Daiseo company is operating the chemical plant. They have a lot of vessels or valves to control. So they systemized, and their performance is becoming quite high. Now they are sharing this sort of method within Japan. This is the final. So-called integrated approach. I'd like to introduce one activity which is done in Japan, the so-called Kyoyohin or accessible design in international standardization organization or barrier-free in the UN or universal design in the US or design for all in the EU, DFA, or Europeans often say design for environment, DFE kind of things, DFA. For examples, this is a shampoo bottle. This one is a rinse bottle. So people can feel this wave. Then this is a shampoo one. If the person has a visibly handicapped, or even for us, taking shower, we don't see that, and we feel and identify kind of things. Kao company first invented this, and it was shared by Shiseido or the Procter & Gamble in Japan, kind of all companies now doing applying this. This is Toyota's car. This seat changes and comes out. So, aged, for example, the aged people who have some knee trouble can easily get on the car. So the common points to this car and the shampoo bottle is not specifically designed to the handicapped people. Just slightly change. Time is all right. Couple minutes. A slightly design change makes good for both general people and slightly handicapped people. Makes market larger and the industry can more relaxed to do that. There's many more examples. This is the paper package for milks. If you feel this dimple, then this is not juice or tea. This is milk. And the beer cans on the top. There's a braille. Braille is the French and the dot for the blind people. It tells alcoholic drink. And this is wrapping films. W cap letter is on. And its market is now becoming growing as much as 7.4% a year in the past 5 years. It's now 30 to 43 billion Japanese yen or 32 billion US dollar now. It's including appliances, housing goods, or kind of things that I introduced before. More conceptually, handicapped and elderly people who have heavy handicap are covered by government welfare policy. But when people are quickly being aged, this sort of surrounding area is quickly growing. And the top is past, center is now, and the bottom is in the future, near future. And if you look at this color, the green one is covered by basically by the government policy. And the red one is covered by the market or industry. If industries fail to do that, government eventually have to pay some more budget coming from the tax. So this is what I'm saying, that the industry take a good role, then the economics of market can solve certain part of the problem. So coming back to the same chart again, this sort of individual use of assisted devices for handicapped comes into this sort of kyoyohin or assistive, or barrier-free goods. This is conceptually the market size. This sort of word is coming from Europe normalization in the 50s, barrier-free in the UN in the beginning of 70s, and Japan, this sort of activity started in 70s and 80s, and the Japanese party proposed to the other countries, and finally the ISO, International Standardization Organization's Guide 71 was established in year 2001. Guide 71 is a guidelines for standards developers to address the needs of older persons and persons with disabilities, which means this central area is accessible design area. The left one is, like I said, the wheelchairs or beds for handicapped people. And if the central area widens, then more widely covered cover can be made for handicapped people. So individual standards are here, the bottom. Okay. And this guide 71 is here. So it make a guidance to establish this sort of individual standards. So the Japan may served as a chair nation to establish this 71. And now shampoo bottles sign is shared by China and South Korea. We are often talking. And those three countries co-proposed recently to establish more of these individual standards. It was quite happy to be accepted by ISO. So this was what I talked and what went on, challenges and industry's role. And finally, why the kyoyohin kind of activities are done in Japan was Japan's industry's way of doing is quite consistency kind of things is quite important. So recently, CSR or SR kind of words is being common, but built-in kind of way of thinking is in the Japanese industry's way of doing. So doing this, I think we might have some solution or a contribution for the problems our economy or societies are facing the challenge. That's all I have. Thanks for attention.
When I was a young and struggling freelance journalist a long time ago, in the 1970s, and trying to find my way around the issues of the U.S.-Japan trade friction and the mysteries of Japanese industrial policy, there was a not so young, well, younger than now, but older than me, journalist at Nikkei in New York, who was one of my Sherpas in guiding me through this puzzling situation. And so I'm very pleased to be able to discuss Kojima-san's presentation as a way of maybe a thank you note for 35 years ago. But Derek tells me we're running late, so I'm going to wrap up now and thank you very much.
Great.
Goto-san's presentation was actually fascinating, but if you're going to forgive me, I'm going to focus on what Kojima-san said, which is that this is an incredibly severe recession that Japan has had. Here's a recession that began in the United States, and yet Japan was hit worse than everybody else, even though it didn't get into any of these financial shenanigans that other people had. To see how bad this recession was, in the 6.25 years from the end of 2001 to the beginning of 2008, we were told Japan was having this marvelous recovery, that all the problems were solved, reform was on the way, Koizumi had really done it, it's growing, it's great. There were people at certain think tanks in Washington, whose names I will not mention, who talked about Japan having now reached potential growth of 2.5%, perhaps even 3% of GDP. I think it was 2 to 2.5%, right? In 1 year of this recession, 70% of that entire recovery was wiped out, 70%, which to me says maybe the recovery wasn't so solidly based in the first place. Why was Japan so vulnerable? Moreover, going forward, this is the latest forecast from the World Bank, came out about a week ago. In 2011, if the World Bank is correct, Japan's GDP will still be 4% below what it was in 2007. The U.S. GDP will be 3% above, and Europe about 1% below. So no one's doing great, but Japan's doing the worst. So we're talking about, therefore, in 2012, it will still be below. This is worse than the period from the financial turmoil of the late 90s. It's horrible, horrible track record. And Kojima-san tells us that the output gap, that is the gap between what would Japan's GDP be if it were operating at full employment and full capacity, and what's the actual level of GDP, he tells us it's 7% below. There's a 7% gap. Moreover, that gap will not be filled until the end of this decade. All right? So that raises an issue. One is, why is it so flimsy? And secondly, what should be the appropriate response? As to why it's so flimsy, I'm really chartaholic. I'm sorry, I'm trying to recover. But Amy, you know, she's an enabler. She said, you know, bring down those charts. I said, I don't want to. She said, no, you got to do it. So blame Amy. In this recovery, I don't have a laser thing, but here you go. Okay. So investment, business investment, 16% of GDP, but it accounted for a third of the entire growth in GDP during this first 5 years of recovery. That is not a sustainable path. It was a path produced by ultra-low interest rates where, you know, God knows, I think it was 20% of borrowers were getting loans at, I thought it was a wrap-up note, but it wasn't, it's a laser. We're getting loans at something like 0.5% interest rate. All right. Then you have a trade surplus. Trade surplus at its height was about 5% of GDP, but it too accounted for a third of all growth. And if you do the stats, do the regressions, you'll find that a lot of the business investment was in fact oriented toward trade. Whereas consumption, on the other hand, which is more than half of GDP, only accounted for about a quarter of growth. This is an incredibly imbalanced and vulnerable recovery. And the idea that this was going to pass the baton to private consumption never happened. Now, this was not because people didn't want to spend. In fact, the savings rate plummeted. What happened was people weren't earning any money because these glorious profits of Japanese corporations that stockholders were telling us, investment banks were telling us, not stockholders, stock sellers, were telling us, buy Japan because it's doing great. Those profits, an awful lot of them, came from holding down the wages of workers who instead could not buy the products. But that's okay, because you're going to sell them to the foreigners until you couldn't. So it's a very, very flimsy recovery. So that raises the question, what is the proper policy of the Japanese government? And there was a debate before the DPJ released its growth strategy a few weeks ago. There was a debate between Naoto Kan, who's now the finance minister, was the deputy prime minister and still is, was the head of this national strategy unit on the one side, and Heizo Takanaka, who had been Koizumi's chief economic advisor, on the other hand. And Takanaka said the key thing is supply-side measures. What can we do to raise the potential rate of growth? In other words, what would be the rate of growth of Japan at full capacity, full employment, yada, 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 all right? Which was estimated at the time, some people said about 1.5%. So we've got to raise that. Now some people say 1%. So it's supply-side tax cuts and deregulation, all the usual stuff. So supply-side, it's all potential growth. And Kahn said, you know what? If there's no market, people are not going to produce. If we're going to have an output gap lasting for this decade, the key thing is to focus on demand. how do we increase demand so people can buy what the companies produce? Because no one's going to produce if no one can buy. And if they do produce and there's no customers, it's going to end up being all bad debt. And he said the Koizumi reforms had failed. And Khan's side one, this growth strategy came out, was demand-side oriented. And my reaction is, stop, you're both right and you're both wrong. Yeah, the point is, you do need supply side and you do need demand side. You're both right, but you're both wrong. That's the only thing you need. More than 100 years ago, there was a very famous economist named Alfred Marshall who pointed out a very simple thing. A scissors needs two blades to cut. Right, Derek? You need two scissors, right? Okay. Supply and demand. So all those supply-demand diagrams you get in class, if you take Echo 101, that's Marshall. You can thank him for that. He also taught Keynes. You need supply and demand. And the fact is, it's the same dysfunctions in the Japanese economy which cause the supply-side problems, the low potential growth, and the demand-side problems. For example, you take farming, right, as sort of the poster child for inefficiency in Japan. If you were, and you got all these farmers, I think about 65% of them are over age 65 at this point, and they call themselves farmers, but they don't really do much farming, but they get tax breaks, and sometimes they work in construction for bridges to nowhere, or airports to nowhere, or they have, you know, their kids are running away. So it would be cheaper, instead of subsidizing them to produce nothing, or pretend to produce something, it would be cheaper to pension them off, give them money, let in cheaper imports, consolidate farms so they're bigger and more efficient. I mean, the purpose of farming in Japan, of farmers in Japan, is not to grow food. The purpose is to grow votes for the LDP. That's why they're kept small. Okay? So let them consolidate, change the land use laws so corporations can buy land and actually do agribusiness or convert farmland to other uses, buy the imports, pay off the farmers not to work. It would cost less than the current system. It would provide cheaper food for all the people who buy food. And it would liberate their money to buy other things. It would help both the supply side efficiency and the demand side. This is throughout the economy. And industry after industry after industry. The same dysfunctions which caused Japan to potential growth to be so low, about 1% now, is exactly the same problem why real wages are down. And we can get, well, we won't get into the details because we ain't got no time. But, so, I got these really, really snazzy charts that I'm not going to be able to use. But here's the OECD forecast. This is potential growth from 2012 to 2017. You see, Japan is the second lowest. Belgium, thank God for Belgium. Right, 0.9% of GDP. That's the best once it reaches full capacity. This is awful. And the DPJ so-called growth strategy accepts this. The DPJ growth strategy has little growth and even less strategy. I mean, tourism is supposed to save the country. All right. So that raises the second question. So the first question is, what should be the focus, demand side or supply side or both? I'm going to throw it back at our panelists or questioners or audience. Second is just, can the DPJ do it? Well, can it do it? Yeah. Will it do it? I don't know. The current policy of the DPJ will not do it. Now, what I don't know is whether the current policy is simply a campaign document for July. But here's the problem we get. Kojima mentioned the Koizumi reforms. Actually, you didn't mention it. It's in your paper, but you didn't talk about it. Is that the Koizumi reforms have created a backlash. Koizumi was a kind of like a doctor who wanted to do surgery with no anesthesia. But the resistance forces in the LDP and their counterparts in large parts of the DPJ are people who want to give anesthesia but not do any surgery. What I'd like to see is people who want surgery and anesthesia. Luckily, if you talk to a lot of these DPJ diet members who are in their 40s and their 50s, and they're ex-bureaucrats and they're ex-business people, and yes, ex-economic journalists, yeah. They are sharp. They are smart, they understand the problem, they understand the solution in general terms, and they're struggling for it. The problem is, politically, they don't have the power in that party right now. And the DPJ is in a coalition with people like the socialists in Kame who don't want reform, who want to go back to some Neverland of 20 years ago that just is not going to come back. So that's going to be a political struggle in the DPJ, and my view is the LDP failed because people want performance and the LDP could not provide it. If the DPJ does not provide performance, it too will fall. That the old tactics of special interest politics just don't work because they don't produce growth. And they result in budget deficits, which means you tell older people, either we're going to cut your benefits or we're going to raise taxes on everybody else, and both are politically suicide. Without more growth, both real and nominal, it ain't going to work politically. And so that's the problem. A third final quick point before I get the note. On this question of export dependence, now, which Kojima raised. God, these great charts I'm not going to be able to show you. All right. Look, there's two ways. People get confused by this. There's a difference between the trade surplus and the volume of trade, which sounds technical, but it's really, really important. It's one thing to be dependent upon a large and growing trade surplus. Let me just get rid of all this stuff because we don't need it. All right. Which is that you're saying you export 20% of GDP and you import 18. And then you export 22 and import 18. And you export 25 and import 18. So your trade surplus keeps growing, which means that the rest of the world's got to run a trade deficit. That's what Japan did in this latest recovery. That's why the rise in the trade surplus provided a third of growth. That is not sustainable, because as soon as your partners stop importing as much and your trade surplus goes down, you're smashed. And that's what happened in Japan. That's an unhealthy and unsustainable trade surplus-dependent kind of growth. It's a very different situation, which is what I think Kojima-san was talking about, at least I hope so, which is this. You can say your trade surplus is 2% of GDP, which would be reasonable for Japan, 2 or 3%. You can have that by exporting 12% of GDP and importing 10, or by exporting 22 and importing 20, or by exporting 42 and importing 40. Now, that's a kind of a very healthy situation in a couple ways. One is it's sustainable. The world can sustain that 2% level. Secondly, the higher your ratio of trade to GDP in that way, that means you're exporting the things you specialize in and you're importing the things you're not so good at. There's absolutely no reason for Japan to import a single drop of crude oil. People say Japan's got to import crude oil because it doesn't produce any oil itself. It's ridiculous. Most countries in the world which don't produce oil do not import crude oil. They import petroleum products. Japan is lousy at petroleum refining industries. They're very, very inefficient. Japan will be better off importing the petroleum products, saving the money, again, lowering prices for businesses and consumers. It would help efficiency, get those companies producing what Japan does best, help on the supply side, liberate purchasing power, help on the demand side. So when you're part of the World Division of Labor, you specialize in what you do best. You expose your own industries to the force of international competition, which makes them leaner and meaner and more efficient. That kind of trade dependence is really, really good. That's what most of the world has done. Japan has really lagged. It is the biggest lagger in that kind of trade dependence. There's more details on that, which I would tell you about. There's been some changes, except that Japan's often importing from itself. There's Japan importing from Japanese companies in Asia rather than from other companies. So anyway, let me stop there. I haven't got my note yet, so I'm really, really ahead of the game. And thank you very much. Bye-bye.
I want to give Professor Kojima and Dr. Goto a chance to respond if they want to, and I would encourage them. If they don't really want to respond, that's okay.
Last point about the export surplus. Yeah, we cannot keep the big export surplus out of total GDP. But since several years ago, we have a new external surpluses. That's income balance surpluses. It's an income from the investment in the form of direct investment or portfolio investment and local business management. And this is increasing sharply. So it reflects the upgraded level of the structure of external trade, external business. So that is one point. Another point, historically, well, crisis makes Japan the big change. And oil crisis of 1970s was a blessing. Actually, at the beginning, it was a terrible shock. But because we have no energy, domestic energy, no oil, we have no choice but to be energy efficient. And actually, that oil crisis made Japanese economy and business much, much energy efficient. And likewise, as emerging economy is growing at very rapid pace, in 10, 20, 12 years' time, emerging economy size of GDP will be larger than industrial countries' GDP total. It's still growing rapidly for some time. And they are not energy efficient. Their growth means very different from the growth of industrial countries. If they grow 1%, comparing with the 1% growth of industrial countries, they consume more than double or triple amount of total energy and resources. It pushes the energy level, price level up. So high energy cost may be with us. It's not a repetition of the 1970s oil crisis when after the artificial increase of oil prices followed by the sharp downturn. But this time around, our economic structure, fundamental global economic structure, are fundamentally changing. In 1970, we have no growth of India or China or emerging economies. But now, this century will be very different. It's how we must be prepared to the high level of energy and resource prices. For that, as we don't have, Japan has no energy domestically and very little endowment to other natural resources, we have no choice but to improve our efficiency. That is the trigger, the innovation, technological breakthrough. So we think we will look this new realities, we can address in a different way, and the outcome will be very different. And in case of auto, finally, Toyota is some problem today, but apart from that, why Japanese auto industry became stronger while Detroit is declining? Because U.S. had the energy. Japan have no oil. So oil crisis made the crossing of the trend of competitiveness of Detroit and Toyota. Likewise, next few years, economy will be very different in terms of the structure and the technological paradigm. So if business challenge the new realities, it's create a chance. If business just avoid any risks, our future will be constant decline. So we are now at a very, very important, historically important crossroad. Thank you.
Just briefly, Mr. Katz mentioned about the cabinet, the economic growth strategy, which was issued in the 30th of December. And it is, I know it is said to be too much emphasizing on the demand side. And the fact it was, our minister, or Trade Minister Naoshima, ordered us to draft the supply side vision within METI. And we are now starting up with this sort of work already. And it will be issued in May. So it doesn't mean make some no trouble. The both sides is important, and our minister said. So we should study for the supply side. So that's happening. So as a fact.
All right, my constant harassment of the panelists has paid off in 5 minutes for questions. Open the floor. I will not exercise the moderator's prerogative. I want you all to have a chance to talk to them. Please be considerate of your fellow audience members and be concise in your question, and whoever would like to ask the first question. I have a microphone. Yes.
Thank you, Derek. Tom Walk, Bank of Tokyo, Mitsubishi UFJ. Richard and a couple of people pointed out that the distribution by the Japanese corporation to workers were less. As you pointed out, that the share has been constantly not much growth, or very steady. That's often pointed out by the many economists. But I think that's the reason why the Japanese corporations struggle was one is low wage workers competition from China or emerging economies, and the other reason is the constant pressure from American fund managers, give us more dividend, give us more share. So I think that each CEO's just struggled in the last 5-6 years. So my question is, what's your recommendation to DPJ leadership, DPJ government, try to change such corporations' way of thinking to more balanced, to give more balanced growth to the Japan? Whether what's the recommendation would be maybe deregulation or a couple of other recommendations. I just like to have your some comments on that.
Okay. Well, with all due respect, I think Japanese corporations that blame China or the U.S. for their decisions, I just think is just an excuse. I mean, first of all, the U.S. investors may have demanded dividends. They didn't get any. Japan has a horrible payout rate. Every time they try to go to an annual meeting and say increase the dividend rate, the stable shareholders voted it down. So the alliance of managers with each other voted it down. They didn't get those dividends they asked for. So that's no excuse. And as far as China, yeah, there are certain industries where the Chinese compete, but it's such a small fraction of the overall economy. That's not it. It's that the Japanese CEOs thought the way to increase their cash hoard to avoid another debt crisis was to squeeze their workers. And what do they do with the cash? The cash flow that they kept grew larger and larger and larger, and they wasted it on white elephant investments in many cases. So I think that's the source of it. And one of the mechanisms was this part-time labor issue, which gets to your question of solution. The so-called irregular workers, who are part-timers and temporaries, who are often working side-by-side with full-time regular employees doing the same job, getting 25-30% less per hour, not to mention lack of bonuses, lack of other kinds of fringe benefits, grew to one-third of the labor force. Now, the reactionaries, if you want to call them, the DPJ, the people who want to go back to the old days, say, let's abolish this irregular employment because it's not really being used for true flexibility, it's being used for wage cuts. And that is, to my view, the wrong way to go. The way to go is, how do you combine flexibility and good wages? What you ought to do, and there are people in METI I know who are arguing for this, is say, okay, you can use the irregular workers all you want, but let's equalize the conditions. If you're doing the same job, you should get the same wage, and maybe there's an initial entry period when you're being trained a little lower. But in other words, you can combine flexibility and good wages. There are various sorts of measures. I think the DPJ measures of child allowances and other measures to help household income, I think are very, very good. The problem is they delayed them because of excessive fear of a JGB crisis, which I think is an unreal fear. So I think there are a number of measures they could take. It's not about changing the mind of corporations. Executives, I think the thing is to have certain regulations, certain laws, change the behavior. The hearts and minds, I think, will follow later.
Yeah, some footnote type of comment about that. Well, you know, many of the American friends may still keep the impression that Japan is a very high savings ratio society. But when we look at the household level of savings ratio, your American household savings ratio is at this moment 2-3 times higher. You know? Because you must save in the U.S. to pay off the debt. In Japan, business restructured their balance sheet by cutting wages. Wages have been, total household wages or income of Japan have been on the decline for 10 years since 1998. So it's, but happily for business, the consumption never go into the negative territory. So what happened? The equation means that the savings ratio decline to the level at this moment 2% to 3%, 2 points from around this level. The savings ratio, national savings ratio, is rather constant, but the distribution changed from household to business. So it's not a too easy type of business management. And what is necessary is business must create a new frontiers of technology, new frontiers in the industries, and create employment. Otherwise, simple cutting wage costs and increasing the liquidity of the business means there is a suicide cost for business. They are killing their own market, consumer market. So we must change the process. Thank you.
Grant.
Hi, it's Grant Aldonis. Thanks, Turk. I'm surprised at what I didn't hear in one sense, which is given the demographic challenge, and given what we know about economic growth, that there wasn't more of a comment about raising productivity and about the extent to which a combination of increasing the development of technology, the implementation of new technologies, technological change, as well as trying to foster a culture along those lines is going to be required, given that we're simply multiplying the productivity rate across a declining working population. And so the question in my mind is there anything that's being adopted as a set of policies by the Hatoyama government that would realign the economic incentives in Japan that would really drive change in terms of productivity rates?
Uh-oh. You. Another enabler.
I'll pay you later. Yeah, this is it. You know, this is... Here you go. All right, this is what I'm talking about the supply side to raise potential growth, which is now about 1%. In any economy, how fast you grow at full capacity, full employment, is how fast is the labor force growing, that is how many hours per work you get total out of all the workers working, and the growth in output per worker. Since 1990 in the black area, the work hours have gone down because of the shrinking size of the working age population and underemployment. So all of the growth has been this gray area, which is increase in productivity. The average growth has been about 1.5% a year. So if you take 1.5% a year growth in productivity and a workforce is declining by about 0.5% a year, you're going to get 1% as your maximum growth. So, yeah, the issue is to raise productivity. And when people in Japan talk about raising productivity, they say, well, let's just spend more money on R&D. Let's move into nanotechnology. I think that's wrong. Japan, look at this is Japan's productivity level compared to the U.S. It's 30% below the U.S., 30% below in terms of output per worker per hour, which means an awful lot of industries in Japan which are not producing at world benchmark levels. And if you look at the America's productivity revolution, it's been totally mischaracterized as a so-called new economy. Not true. Most of the growth, about two-thirds of the acceleration of U.S. productivity growth, did not come from the so-called new economy. It came from the old economy sectors that were utilizing both the new technologies and off-the-shelf technologies, sectors like retail, like Rust Belt manufacturing, under pressure of severe competition domestically and globally. You take Japan, Toyota's terrific, the automobile's terrific, but the really high-class, world-beating sectors of the Japanese economy are 20% of the economy. You take the whole rest of the economy, construction and services and the whole Kashmir, farming, right? If you expose them to more competition internally and via trade, they will be forced to either do better or get out of business. The reason why autos is so great is because autos produces for the world market. Same thing with Canon and companies like that. So the source of productivity growth is going to be reforming of the old economy in Japan, not from some exotica like nanotechnologies. Is the DPJ doing anything about that? No. Are there people in the DPJ who want to do something about it? Absolutely. Those are those ex-economic journalists I was telling you about, man. They're really, really great. But they are not running the show. Now, there are people in METI who, working with these DPJers, are trying to produce something. They might do better if they wait till August instead of May to release it, so then you can say something honest. But that's the fight that DPJ is going to have. If it has that fight, there's enough people in the DPJ who know the right way, I think it's got a really good chance of succeeding. If they don't have that fight and don't come up with it, they're going to fall from power like the LDP.
I'm sorry. I know there are more questions, but we're way over time, and I think we're going to have to wrap. We are supposed to take a 15-minute coffee break after this panel, but I think it'll be more like 15 seconds. If you could hold it to 10 minutes, that would be great. Thank you, everyone.